welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hey, what's up, everyone? And welcome back to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to founders, executives, evangelists, and we get their insights into what it takes to scale up not only your business, but also yourself. And super excited to have David on the show today. David is the founder of Deal Rocket, and he's also the president of Sea Advantage, and he's been doing that for a number of years. So, you know, super excited, David, to welcome you on the show today, and looking forward to our chat. Welcome.
Thank you, Richard. Great to be here. And, you know, before we get going, thank you for what you do. I know it takes a lot of work, and I know your audiences appreciate it. I do. And thank you.
Awesome. And yeah, thanks for kind words. And before we kick off, I always like to give a bit of a high-level view as to what we're going to be discussing, so it gives the listeners an insight before we dive into the detail. So, as you all know on the show, we dive into what it takes to really scale up your business. And there's no one important ingredient is making certain that you remain focused. We all have lots of distractions. We live in a world on our mobile phones where we get pinged on Facebook, we get pinged on LinkedIn, on TikTok, and all these other things that drain our energy and maybe drain our attention somehow. So it's critical that we remain focused on what we actually want to achieve in our business, but also in our lives. And, you know, making certain that we do that is even more critical when we look at setting up a business and looking at certain pain points or problems that we want to solve as entrepreneurs and business owners. So today we're going to dive into the area of maintaining focus and see sort of what it means and what it takes to maintain that focus so that you're always striving towards solving the problems for your ideal customer, because that's what we're here. We're here to solve those big problems so our customers can live a cool life, right? Let's be honest. And, you know, I'm going to bring David into the show, and maybe let's kick off with an area that is sometimes well understood and maybe sometimes not understood, and it's something called MVP. I was speaking to David a few weeks ago when we were having a chat, and his definition of MVP was slightly different and maybe unique to some of the other some of the main definition that's out there. And, you know, I wanted to bring you in and ask you, David, I mean, as you starting out a business and as you looking to, you know, build that business, should you be focusing on your minimal viable product or service, or should you be looking at the most valuable problem in your market so that you can go off and build something for that specific problem? It'd be good to get your insights on that.
That's a great question. And I should probably warn your audience ahead that my views may be in the distinct minority. So I'll go from there. But I don't really think the two are necessarily mutually exclusive. And this is why I'll tell you why. We view MVP as solving the customer's most valuable problem in a way they've never experienced before, which is only going to enhance their customer experience and the premium model itself. So if you're trying to enhance the business social experience and the premium business model, which means that you don't want to just compete on price, you want to compete on the experience and new services and the one keeping the bar moving, or is it that you need to get a minimally viable product out in the marketplace first? That's usually what people tell you. Well, I don't know what the definition of minimally viable product is, because I think it depends, Richard, what industry you're in or what segment you're in. I'll give you an example. We, for example, are in the business of platforms. So I could say what a minimally viable product when it comes to a platform, as opposed to someone else who may be developing an app, if you see what I'm saying, yeah, or some type of new product that maybe you can taste. So maybe whether it's, you could be cooking in your kitchen, right? And see, is this good? Oh, no, it needs a little more salt or needs a little bit more of that, or that may be how you're looking at it, or maybe it got well received and different things. So I think it really depends on what level you're at. And I mean by economic level or experience level and so forth. But if you're going to build a platform and it is a massive undertaking, you may not realize it. And what I may call a minimally viable product, you can't get out there until you have gone through really building the entire thing. And now, if you may have a minimally viable product, which could be detached by itself, which then eventually might lead into a marketplace or other type of endeavors, that's one thing. So the long of the short is, I think you have to know where you fit in the ecosystem, where your space is, what you're trying to accomplish. And if it's something that you want to be able to just simply put on a mobile device that can wake you up, for example, when you get up in the morning, versus something that is going to exhaust that, what used to take an exhausting period that maybe people found too complex, didn't want to get involved in, or felt they were excluded, you're talking about a lot more complicated things. If you're trying to bring more inclusion, well, you can look and see what society has done. We now feel that we can do that in minutes, hours, if not days, versus what may have taken governments still time to try to digest now. So at the end of the day, I think you have to know your place, what you're trying to accomplish. And then all of a sudden, when you see that flash, when you see it really works, in all that time, and maybe banging your head against the wall about what I got myself into, this is what it's about. And also, it also depends on the customer, Richard, that you may want to go after. Are you going after the consumer? Are you going after a millennial? Are you going after kids? Whatever it is, versus are you trying to sell a big fish? Those very large companies who may need a most valuable problem solved because they have to know it can scale. And so I really think it becomes target audience, ultimately target fit, and then really, what do you want to do? And also, some people may not think something is good enough to get out in the marketplace first, which should never really hamper you. That doesn't mean you can't get the opinions first like that. So at the end of the day, Richard, I think I weigh on the side for ourselves from the MVP being the most, we're solving the most valuable problem for a customer. Because how are you going to get a big guy to move? It's either going to be speed, giving them access to a marketplace they never have, or an experience that the customers didn't have, but you can give it to them fast without disrupting their own business. So I think those are ways that we look at it. And as opposed to someone who may be looking at solving a very specific problem that might be have bothered them that they can take on to other people, and they can do it extremely fast. And by the way, it might work, but it doesn't take that much to get it out to the marketplace. And so I think these are, hopefully I'm making sense to you, but yeah, these are all things, these are all things I weigh. And, you know, at the end of the day, like the acupuncturist would say, you got to find your chi, right? You got to find where you're unclogging that drain, where you, I know you're writing a book on zones, but there's always a zone that's left to be tapped, or in certain cases, untapped, right?
Yeah, I like what you're saying there. I think your product ultimately, yeah, you can get a product out there, but getting a product out there without it actually solving something, and it can be a big company, and I've worked in big companies, and there's lots of different problems, small and big, but I've also worked in smaller companies, and also, again, there's lots of different types of problems. The executives on both ends of the scale, as an entrepreneur, or startup founder, business owner, if you're able to articulate the problem that you're solving, and also, you know, show the steps required for that person or that company or whoever it is to that they need to take in order to solve that problem, you're onto a winner, right? And it can be something simple. There's a few people that I've had on my podcast where they wanted to test a hypothesis and it cost them a fiver, $5 to test. And what do? They set up a landing page and they emailed a group of the contacts that they knew just to run the hypothesis. And off the back of that, they're able to go, you know, there was good response or there wasn't good response. We have to tweak something. So they iterated on that. So they were testing something and testing whether they knew the market and whether they knew the problem. And also obviously testing whether they're grabbing the customer's attention. And once they grab the customer's attention, they're like, okay, let's drill down on that. And let's start investing maybe, you know, 20 quid or 40 quid and start building it out. interestingly, the people that I'm actually referring to have now just raised, you know, I think it was like 5.5 million in seed round funding over the last year. So I think the point being, from my perspective, no matter what you're doing, firstly, you know, solve problems. Problems are great. You can go out and solve different types of problems. And also to your point, David, you know, like what you're doing. Don't just solve a problem because you see it in front of you. If you don't like what you're doing, the problem you solve is not going to fulfill you on your journey. And once it fulfills you, that's actually sort of where the next level of power comes in, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I call it also a nudge factor, which is, like, for example, with Deal Rocket and our new platform called Startup Rocket, I had the Deal Rocket one I had in my head for a long time. And by fluke, I happened to get invited to write for the Huffington Post, which is now called HuffPost, and a couple articles, and they went like viral. I mean, much to my surprise. I'm not a professional writer. I'd never really done it before. And they both became, I think, like top 10 pieces. But people came out of the woodwork. You know, they find your email and so forth. And it took me well over a week to respond. My view is if people are going to reach out to you, you owe a service or a duty to come back to them, which is probably a good customer experience thesis anyways. But then didn't really think much of it. And then my wife, who's not really the, I mean, she's the brains behind the operation and this is the greatest thing I've ever done, but she's not the risk taker in our relationship. And she said to me politely, you know, that bitching and moaning that she didn't say it like this, but talking about the marketplace is so inefficient that most people don't know or not get into a marketplace. Like if they want to start a business, buy a business, get involved, support a business, invest. There's a lot of people that, you know, I just felt they're so inefficient and the small guy was always getting left in the shorts. And it was like always this club that they wanted everybody else in but you. So I've done a lot of deals and expertise and it just bothered the heck out of me. And I'm a big believer in inclusion. So she said to me, Ellen says, my bride, she says, you know what? You can knock on doors for the next 5 years, but the feedback you've received from these readers, you got in less than a week. So I think they're telling you something. So this is what I'm talking about, starting to get that nudge, okay? So I got the nudge and they said, you know, she says, if you're going to do it, you might as well start moving on it because otherwise hold your peace and don't, you know, it's not worth your time and it's renting space in your head, which is a term I like to use too. It's kind of interesting when someone gives you back your own language, but, and she was great about it. And then I wanted to, and here comes another nudge. So I felt good about it. And I also wrote this article later on about pivoting, that you also have to be prepared to pivot and have thick skin. You almost have to have your, give yourself a little bit of a pep talk there too, because you're going to be going into a sphere that you may not be ready for. And people may not like what you want. And probably, as this football coach said in the United States, Bill Parcells, that half the people that you meet probably don't want you to succeed anyway. So you got to be ready for, you know, that too. And everybody will have an opinion. But, you know, with that said, I realized that I wanted to find out from potentially five of the largest financial services firm if I could just write an unsolicited one-paragraph email to see if I get a response back for feedback. Just like your people did on Fiverr, right? They pay $5 or whatever it is, right, to get the initial. So I sent out these unsolicited emails. And anyway, long story short, I sent one at 4 p.m. Thursday. And on a Friday at 8 a.m., at 8 a.m. I get a call back from Wells Fargo. And I'm like, whoa, you know, like apologizing they didn't get back to me sooner. Now, they've only had this email less than like 14 hours, you know what I mean? So it's like, wow, how do you even get to that company like that? You know what I mean? So anyways, they said, oh, this is so exciting. You talk about ecosystem investing and you talk about big guy, little guy collaboration and how you can bring all these people together and how the large guy can help the small guy and the small guy can help the big guy, you know, from the innovation side and you bring it all together. And then, you know, they're going on and I'm waiting for that, you know, like, butt to drop. And then but then assuming you can get all those people invited onto the platform, and by the way, we have another 10 to 12 million in our ecosystem. You know, we have different businesses, we have teams, we have referral partners. I mean, they, you know what I'm talking about. So I said, yes. How do we know it works? So this is what I call the second big nudge, which is outside of having the big idea, someone still has to usually nudge you forward, you know, to get you out of your comfort zone. Again, part of one of your terms, zone, right? Anyways, they said to me, how do we know it works? We are tired of hearing about, and we can't waste any more time on these minimally viable products. So I said, really? She goes, like, we're big. We got to make sure it scales, it works. We don't want to see five examples or like a rigged game and, you know, to us and all that. The question is, so I said, okay, what is the question? What would it make you comfortable to do this? You know, I mean, to move. And they said, we need something, a building out ahead of time, a full marketplace that we know that works. And I said, what would that entail? They said, well, we would need at least 15 to 20,000 mock real, some type of users on there that you can make this happen with. And you give us the access and passwords and all that and go in and let us play with it and try to blow it up. I said, really? So keep in mind, instead of taking a win and going home and like, even though we hadn't written a stitch of code, knowing at least we got that nudge right in the direction, I said, well, why don't we go with 50 to 100,000? Even better, she says. So anyways, I started laughing and that's how it came into, because what they said to us, what these big guy says to us, it said to me, and I'm reading through the lines, is you need to solve our biggest, most valuable problem. Yeah. And if you can do that, that's what we need from you. We also need something that can move the needle for our customer experience. And so if you ever go on to Deal Rocket, that's with an IT at the end, or startuprocket.com, you go to our about page and you'll see our values under there. And you'll see that this MVP, and I'm just looking at it right now, relieving customers of the creativity burden so they can become the business magnets and innovators and expires they want to be. So you got to be able to give them a nudge too. You got to be able to pass that baton. And that's one of the most important things, is that you don't control, nobody controls an entire process of anything, but you got to put people in the best position to succeed, or as we say, so they can take it from there. And that's one of the exciting things about developing marketplaces, about getting people out of zones, because part of people's zones that you talk about is their comfort zone. And if you can give them something that's business ready, ready to go, that's going to eliminate a lot of excuses. Well, I don't know them. Well, now you can match, right? Now you can like-minded and bring these people together. And our view is, if you get more people, the more people you get off the sidelines and into the game, it's better for everybody. So, you know, that's what we're about. And at the same time, it's how do you take the Richards of the world who do all this great work and others, and how can we help potentially them also expand their businesses? Because not everything has to be handholding, where you literally could bring on these players at one time and get them onto this marketplace, get them on these deal teams or yourself, and also raise this capital that shouldn't be so darn hard to do. You know, why is it? And I give your client, that the one who raised that $5.5 million, they obviously knew ahead of time that they are playing to a PE or venture capital audience, because they may not have done what that, the feedback, the poll that you talked about, you know what I'm saying? And certain things like that, because they realize that's how they want to be sold, right? First question is, how do we know that your hypothesis can work? Now, I didn't even want to worry about the hypothesis. We blew through that and got our complete platform. But someone like that has a different approach and smart. We have this hypothesis. This is what we did. We had it validated. Now we want to go there. And they basically disarmed the venture capital or firm or whoever the managing funder and said, wow, I didn't even have to ask you that question. So they understood their audience. They may not understood the ultimate audience, but their audience was to get off the ground, right? They needed $5.5 million, right?
Exactly.
So anyways, that's one of the beauties of the world in punches.
I love what you say in the end. As you guys went through that process, you went from that problem statement that you knew you could solve with marketplaces, and then all of a sudden, boom, like a rocket ship, you launched off and you got into discussions with, you know, quite large financial institutions. I mean, as you started acquiring these clients onto your platform, how did you make certain that you continuously were laser focused on that problem statement that you're looking to solve?
You know, that's a great question. And I'll give you the best answer I can, but I think it's always a continuous process. Once you lose that focus, you need to exit. And I always have a rule of two, where you try to, whether you bring someone to your organization thinking them two steps ahead, or the rule of two of where your platform is now, even if people say it's the best. I mean, we won the best business development platform in 2020 by a major business publication. And, you know, it's pretty great. But I mean, for me, it's nice to hear that. But I mean, I already can see where 9.0 can go in my mind and different things like that and what we want to do. So it's always looking at raising the bar. And also, we have sandboxes and test platforms as well, which are probably, they're even better than what we have in our main platform, because this is where we do all our testing and come up with all these new ideas and move things forward. And people who are part of our testing on there can see it and, you know, play with it that way as well. But I think you have to have that feeling that how do you make people better versions of themselves? How do you allow them to be that innovator? You're doing something for them, right? And if you always have that in mind, that means once they've gotten this level, how do you keep them moving? As the pandemic has taught us, and it caused us a lot of consternation, we may have been 4 to 5 years ahead of the world or the game, but all of a sudden, 4 to 5 years got consolidated into a week, basically, when the pandemic goes. So we had to basically decide that we were at 1.0. We better get the 4.0 in a hurry, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Now, people are going to say, well, how many times has the pandemic hit and all that? Well, whatever it is, this is the things you have to continue. And what I've always tried to do is put myself in a customer's shoes, since I've sat on most sides of the table and been all different type of positions. And I think whether you have a business, that you have to understand what's going on throughout, understand processes. And each time you have to figure out not how it's going to succeed, but what you're doing is going to fail. And if you're the chief person who wants it to fail, you really don't. But meaning you're going to try to test every way and come up with every type of hypothesis and actually try to make it not work, then it's probably going to be a good thing that the rest of the organization is going to do. And I think also having discussions with your team and being able to bring them in and recognizing that different schools of thought and diversity of thought and views and how you're moving things along, as long as everybody's rowing in the same direction, is really good. And can these be contact sports? Yeah, you could argue that they could be. But as long as people have the discipline and realizing that it's not a disparaging match, it's trying to get to the best solution and who you're trying to discuss, you got to have a pretty thick skin and also let other people carry the ball, because if you're the one who's been the major proponent of it, I mean, do I like to have influence? Sure. Do I like to have people think I can lead? No question about it. Mm-hmm. But the other times, one of the great things about leadership is understanding that you just don't want yes people around either. And when you develop your most valuable, solve your most valuable problem or create your minimally viable product, I think you have to keep those and all that, you know, in mind as well. And at the end of the day, you have to live with yourself and be true to yourself. Some people may have a vision of that's all they want to be is a unicorn, but I've tried to take the approach that who can we help? What do we solve? And the profit will be there. And that, as we have discussed, I think in the past, experience or inexperience can work for you and against you. Experience can give you a little bit of the patience and to not have to pay that dummy tax because you've already done it and experienced certain things. But there's also, you still want that naivete of the entrepreneur or that basketball player who can't think about missing the last shot. And you got to keep shooting, keep moving forward. Yeah. And, you know, there's been some great, whether Martin Luther King has written about, if you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. And if you can't crawl, just do anything you can to start moving forward. So I think these are great things. Or I think Michael Jordan said something like, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. But at the same time, that's true. But basketball is a bang-bang business. Software is a bang-bang business. People don't see it like that. Yeah. But you have to learn how to pass extraordinarily fast and probably pretty close to the speed of light. Because if you can't, we have a really robust database. I mean, it is huge. And how do you take all these things together and make it so that the end product gets the customer so fast, going through all this different type of data? People call it big data. Well, you know, big data to me is, if you're calling it big data, that means you just have no idea where it goes, where it fits, who it should go to, and how they can make best use of that information so they can go on about their day, their job, their life, their profession, or aspiration. And that's one of the things that we try to do at Split Seconds. And I think what people appreciate is when you're thinking about them and doing something for them. And that's a major philosophy we have. And at the same time, you have different generations today that look at things a little bit differently. And I think some are of the opinion that we will do this. If you scratch my back, then I'll scratch your back first, right? You know, there's others that are like, how can I help? And as my mother says to me, sometimes it just drives me crazy that I'm repeating some of her lines now, but they're really pearls of wisdom. Like, when I was a little kid, and I used to say to her, like, come up with some grandiose idea. And she goes, why don't you start by cleaning up your room? So it's not a bad thing to do, is to clean up your room and get your house in order, maybe before you do certain things. On the other hand, if you get so narrow-minded, she used to say, well, that's why there's 31 flavors, or Baskin and Robbins, and there's more than chocolate and vanilla ice cream. There's so many different choices out there. So how do you take this pool, this basket, this great thing called the internet, and turn it into the cloud that can be a direct one-on-one relationship with your customer, who can then forward it on to their customers, and without really lifting a finger themselves, become the hero and allow people more access and opportunity than ever before? And that's what the trick we're trying to do. And one of the issues is, how do you get people's attention, or the big players' attention? And a lot of them talk a pretty good game today, and we'll find out. But if you're not disrupting, you're getting disrupted. That means you probably have a chance to get left behind. And McKinsey, Accenture, all these companies have done studies on this, you know, proving to the point of what's going on out there. But it's kind of interesting what we call the big guy, little guy collaboration. You know, the big guy has that big, you know, ecosystem out right there, can do all the things, and the little guy brings the innovation. But the big just guy to, innovate, I'm just, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just to jump in there, it is what you're saying here is interesting, right? We talk about it a lot in the show. You say innovation, disruption. And, you know, I think as entrepreneurs, I get the innovation and disruption. That's sort of part and parcel of what we should be doing. But, you know, I also like to break it down into something a bit more, you know, maybe pragmatic is the word. Because as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, someone who's founder or an executive, you need to be the cause of what you're doing, right? You need to be going out there, getting your ideas into the universe. And then if you get your ideas onto the universe, they're going to manifest themselves in the universe, and you'll see things start to happen. Likewise, you know, on the opposite side, if you're not the cause, you're not out there doing stuff, you're going to be the effects of situations. And i.e., maybe there's the BlackBerry is a great example of this, right? I think last week or the week before, they stopped making, they announced that they're not going to make mobile phones anymore. I mean, I remember in the 80s or 90s, I think it was, when my folks came home with this new BlackBerry phone. We were like, whoa, this is cool. Yeah. You know, and they were, you know, they're the top dogs. But they did one thing, well, maybe a few things. One thing they didn't do when they're looking at creating new products is they didn't go out into the market and get a sense of what's going on in the market. They're always the best internally, but they weren't the best externally. So they weren't gaining that traction, the information back, putting it back into their processes in creating and updating their products, right? So too, as you know, as entrepreneurs, as businessmen or businesswomen, we need to be doing that. So it's good for us to say, yeah, let's be good internally, let's do best practices, but you know, let's also make certain that we jump out of our little shiny golden box and look at the market and see what's going on. Because once you start losing grips as to maybe new entrants that are coming in, or bigger players that are developing new products or acquiring new businesses, you're going to put yourself in a difficult position, and you're going to lose focus on what you're actually trying to achieve and what you're trying to solve, right? And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to maintain that focus to giving our customers that experience or that product or that service that alleviates their problem. So consistently interact with the market. And the market could be a number of different things. It could be customers. It could be investors. It could be future employees. But that consistent engagement. And what I like to say to my clients is, the route to all expansion is, you know, looks at three simple elements. I say simple, but three things. One is making certain that you have the leadership capability internally to and externally to go and expand how you want to expand. The second is you have to have great relations or relationships, both internally and externally. When I say externally, the public, your investors, your partners, your customers, right? And the next is the communication that goes right through the middle of all of this. Because once you start outflowing, right, once you start communicating to this public, you need to make certain that, again, you're solving that problem and it's taking you towards your purpose. And then there's going to be some inflow, i.e. maybe some checks in the bank account at a point in time. But that silver bullet of focus needs to be, you know, rampant through all of this.
I think you're right. I agree. I think one of the things we try to do here is we call it check our ego at the door. And I think once you start believing your headlines and awards, you better acknowledge them, but they can't define you because you may end up like a BlackBerry. And one of what BlackBerry didn't realize, or a Toys R Us, which thought they were the greatest at selling toys, and then Walmart decided, oh yeah, maybe we should get in the toy business. And you know, they went from the greatest things in sliced bread, Toys R Us, to yesterday's news. And now Walmart has what, 20%+ of the toy market or whatever it is. And categories, I would say with BlackBerry is interesting too, is they caught a couple of major beasts that decided that, called Apple, Google, a few others, Motorola, that decided that, you know, we can force certain things that are not going to work out for those BlackBerry. All of a sudden, you have FaceTime, right? Or you have different type of communications of phone that people now who are battling the mix between business and work, home, this, work life, all those type of things. Think about the battle of the phone. Now the mobile phone. Well, if your kids or your friends have Apple type, you know, an Apple phone, well, a BlackBerry may not work out too well for you because you're not going to be able to stay up and do that. And by you might be forced to have to change over. So I think there's certain things like that. And maybe they should have just licensed their technology and different things too. And, you know, who knows? But I also think that, like what Henry Ford says, if I asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. And I just remember myself seeing when the first iPod came out or the minivan, I wasn't dreaming about those at night or even thinking about them. But, you know, when they came out, I realized, darn it, that's exactly, wow, what a great idea. 1,000 songs on your sleeve, you know, and, you know, this thing that can open up on the side and the back, that, you know, what a, wow.
But that would be the cause, right? They had a business, they had a vision. And they didn't just sit in the background going, okay, well, maybe one day it's going to work out. Let's see. They're out there. You know, Steve Jobs and his team are out there. Their ideation, they're putting their ideas in the market. People were maybe a bit taken aback, but ultimately there's queues. I mean, I remember the day in London when the first iPhone came out and in Fenchurch Street, there's queues around the block to get the first iPhone. I mean, it's absolutely insane. But, you know, those... Yeah, but those ideas were out there, right? And they were, again, you know, they're making things happen. They were causing, in a way, I don't want to say a movement, but they're causing something to happen.
And it is a movement. No question. Yeah. You know, when, like, I'm sorry to step on your...
No, carry on.
If one of Jobs' famous quotes also that you can take with Ford is it's not our job to provide what the customer wants because the customer doesn't know what they want in his mind. And our job is to see what they're doing, process that and put out a product that they can relate to and give us feedback about. That's not really a minimally viable product, right? That's solving a, you know, most valuable problem as well. Now people can say, well, you know, he was Steve Jobs and doing this, but that was his mentality. And by the way, Apple wasn't always Apple. Apple did get into trouble too. And Bill Gates did give him $150 million to help him out. And well, it was a friend. I mean, to keep them going and also develop business ties as well. But business makes strange bedfellows, and that's what you have to understand. And anybody who thinks they have a license on every technology, well, there's a lot of people that we left certain money on the table, like a Deal Rocket, Startup Rocket, because we want other people to play well with us. And like a small company like us, and you know, we're self-funded, I call it the Bank of Carmel, and it's not a real bank, by the way. may feel like it, but it may sound good too. But anyways, in all seriousness, that as fast as I can move on the design floor and do certain things, I cannot move as fast as others because we may not have the economic might to do certain things, if that makes sense. Yeah, totally. Other people, I mean, do I have to go out and build everything AI? No, there's other things out there that we could potentially use. It doesn't mean I don't have a design for it and we're already built certain things. I call it a poor man's version of AI. But there's probably other companies that that's all they do all day is focus on it. And they could probably take what we're doing and realize that, whoa, well, man, this could really help. So I'm just saying is that's one of the beauties today of small businesses and people getting together and putting ideas and different things and people taking your product or platform and doing it in ways you never thought possible. And that's them making it their own, right? That's them making their own entrepreneurial journey. That's them creating their own movement or next act. Yeah. And at the end of the day, we're all, you know, next actors. And that's what we built it for. Because we're always transitioning, whether you're now working from home, right, or remotely, or wherever you want to, whether you want to step your foot in an entrepreneurial world, and but somehow you can't find inroads to make an investment in or get the knowledge. Why? These are all things that we want to make happen extraordinarily fast. So clients of yours and people like you should be able to take what we do and combine it with what you do and we do and rest of your great people out there and turn it into a feeding frenzy. And that's one of the beauties here. And no one has a license on brains, but everybody has a way and path that once they see it, can really hit it. And I think to your point earlier about focus is you have... One of the hardest things is just develop your own thesis statement. You know it in your head, but you know, how do you articulate it out there? And then spending your time, how do you use your time and focus on what you want to accomplish, particularly when there's a internet out there that when your phone pops this, that you could be completely distracted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are the type of disciplines I think you need to bring in and also have fun. I mean, it's pretty exciting to be at certain cutting edge of certain things, but you can't think about it like that too, because it's like you could have the fastest car, but eventually someone's going to pop it out there faster and all that. So you just have to have the best way that you connect with the audience or allow your customers who connect with their customers in a superb way, better fashion than anybody else could do. And that's what, you know, one of the things we try to do.
Oh, I love it. A great sum up there. And, you know, as we wrap up this section before we get into the flash round, final question, how do you continuously get your public to focus on your problem that you're solving? What are the maybe the three tools or strategies or tactics that you use to make certain that your public knows that you know that there's a problem and this is the road to go?
That's an interesting question. And I'll answer it this way, and excuse me if I digress a minute on the word problem, because a problem is a problem with your product or service, or is a problem a greater problem that's bothering them that you may not have fixed or solved for them, or you may have already solved it for them or offered to them, and they may not know about it, okay? So if, does either one matter to what you're talking about, or which one would you like me to address?
I think there's a... Let me give you an example. Maybe if I'm an entrepreneur, I've got a new entrepreneur, a new startup. I've got an issue with setting up my sales organization, sales department. I'm a bit maybe clueless in how to set up. That's a bit of a pain for me because, you know, no sales equals no revenue equals, you know, mortgage that's not being paid, etc. So. You know, that's true life, and that's actually, you know, that's real life.
No question.
So yeah, I guess maybe a pain or a nagging frustration, let's call it that, that your public has. And, you know, what are the best ways that you are in front of them and saying, yeah, listen, I know you got this problem or this pain or this frustration, you know, come use our solution and this gets alleviated.
Well, I would put it two ways. There are some people who are great at broadcasting their own and the talking heads and love to talk about themselves and what they can do and accomplish. Yeah. And there's others that may have a product that if others adapt, may tell your story for you, right? So I always view it that when we build Deal Rocket or anything you do, it's always better when someone else tells your story for you than you going off and telling people, you know, how wonderful you are and this is what you can do. Because at some point in time, it gets pretty nauseating. Excuse, sorry about that, but that's my opinion. I would say, like, if someone like you looked at what we were doing, let's say if I liked your product and I told more and more people about it and different things, that's good for you, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to you necessarily trying to get knocking on doors, because if I tell one person, they may tell two and all those type of things, and they become your ambassador for you. So I've always viewed that type of way. I know I have a friend of mine, very prominent, who basically has no inhibitions about anything, and he will ask anybody for an order and go up and do certain things. On the flip side is, you have to understand your strengths and your weaknesses. And if you're not good at of opening that first door, or once you're in, you can be great. How do you do that? Is there people that can help you get in? Are there tools that could be utilized out there? And that's, you know, do it. But I think the most important thing is to be frank and honest with yourself and straightforward, or have somebody else do it. And, you know, every once in a while, you need that nudge and someone said, this is great. I mean, my wife, I mean, she'll get on the phone, she'll go to something, like, all of a sudden you think it was like the greatest restaurant in the world or this service or whatever. I'm like, God, wow. That's how I think about it. You know, like, I can only imagine they'll spread it to her friends. Look what happened in GameStop or any of these things with Robinhood. Yeah. All of a sudden, 5 million people decided to pull a band together who don't even know each other to make certain things happen. So we are about movements and creating these ecosystems and organizing those in a big way, because we're built about scale.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a habit. On the other hand, yes, I do go on the podcast like yourself, and it's enjoyable because you get challenged and you do, you know, learn certain things. I guess technically this approach would be good for my brand. And I think some of us have to be much better at thinking about those type of things. But I know during the pandemic, I used part of the time to write and get some articles and try to get my thoughts together and views. And, you know, all of a sudden I was a top 50 global thought leader. Now, is that something I set out to do? Absolutely not. But I guess some people like the articles enough, you know what I mean, and to do certain things. So I just think at the end of the day, the long or the short is either you get off your ass and pound it forward, but you can, again, knock on those doors. Where are you going to be spending the best of your time? And sometimes you have to do that dummy tax yourself to find out, you know, what is your best path forward, because you're about to get in a new chartered zone. If you can find someone like yourself or whoever who's kind of help you avoid making some of these mistakes, then that is one of the, I think, great benefits that, you know, can come out of it. And more importantly, someone else may step in, another organization, and they say, I'd like to be your sales arm.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so there's times when you should be able to do it yourself. There's times when you can outsource, correct? Yeah. And that's where, is this something you can do yourself? Can you do it competently? Do you have the time to do it? And you may be so bent on product and things like that, even though that sales is the single most important thing, but you may have the ticket to get you from the lab, the production, all the way through. And some people try to sell and market before they're ready. Mm. And that bothers me a lot, is when you talk, when you're all wind up in no fastball, as they say. And I'd rather be all wind up in all fastball when you're going forward. Yeah. And also try, and you know, you may be able to solve a problem for someone else and they can solve your problem for you. Because if you're trying to scale or build up, you know, enough critical mass to make it go, there's others that may be in the next act business. So take athletes, right? They have a short shelf life and career. Mm-hmm. And how do they transition to the next act? Well, if everybody, you know, if they got in and realized that what they can do on a platform like ours and invite and bring their team, you know, have the teams and the leagues, and they can attract all these millennials and get all these startups and new businesses on and create. And why is it being created? I don't take credit for it. I mean, it's because they put their mind to it and turned something that before that almost no, only the upper 1% could get access to now opening up the playing field and leveling it competitively. And also, it's going to take them into the probably the venture capitalists and the moguls and to the, you know, the getting those speaking and engagement fees, and also these interviews of transit, you know, from sport and to business, right? And do different things. So these are all new things. And so these are the type, I think, the nudges, the people that have your best interest at heart, but also want to succeed themselves, that we can make it work. And I realize it was a short question. I probably put too many words to it, but I may have overthought it. But at the end of the day, I think you have to be straight up with yourself, get some honest advice, see what your time is, I just remember one business they said to me, you really should get out to the warehouse and look at it. And I said to them, we were up to our eyes in alligators taking over this large new business. And I said, it's probably going to be 3 months till I get out there. So, and when I got out there, we made some huge improvements. And don't get me wrong, but today, flashing forward, you have opportunities for other people to step up and supplement what you want to do. And they have better expertise on what you have. And you don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. Mm. And I think that's one of the great lessons. And you wouldn't be in business for yourself, right? Don't people come to you? Don't they want to talk to you? Like, well, I don't know, I really have a problem, but you know, like, what do you think about this? And it's finally, it's their way of, how do you ask for help? And I think at the end of the day is, how do you either get your butt up, or how do you ask for help, or how do you figure where it all fits in? And again, it's back to that, being that entrepreneurial or next act island, right? You shouldn't want to feel like you're alone. You have to feel like, how do you reach out there? And sometimes you have to just try. You're like, yeah. Oh my God. Like, I remember once I was trying to hire a CFO. We put a while ago an ad. We got 3 like huge duffel bags of resumes. I'm showing, I'm being old school on this. This was a long time. I was like, oh my God. And this is before you could look at, I was like, is there anybody that we know that might, like, they have to go through thousands and thousands? I mean, we didn't have the scanning devices in those days, you know, the reader and stuff. So that's what I'm saying is, and now today, even though there's so much more available, I think there's almost less available, because you're like, where do I go? You get distracted and things. And, you know, if you get a good friend and someone like yourself, maybe get you out of certain zones, right? And look at it, and you can make it a lot easier.
Brilliant. Yeah, really, 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 really great points. And, you know, nice into a bit of fun, but at the end of a really insightful show, I'll say that. So what I suggest to everyone listening now is listen back over some of the points there, because it's really important to remain focused and in those zones as you move forward and you expand or you transition to a new act, as David was mentioning. But now into the flash round. The flash round is, as everyone knows, is a bit of fun. I ask 2 or 3 questions to David, and then David takes the mic and asks me a question. And let me kick it off. So here we go. Short answers, the internet to scale or platforms to scale?
Platforms to go, did you say?
Should you use the internet to scale or platforms to scale?
Oh, without a doubt, platforms. If you want to scale, be a platform. And if you can provide and solve the most valuable problem for others, the world will be your oyster. And I'm a thorough believer in that. And there's no other way to scale faster than really through a platform.
Okay. One-on-one selling, i.e. over coffee or lunch, or selling via Zoom?
Wow. I think it depends on your audience. And I could tell you, our platform can do it anywhere, but you know, at the end of the day, there's still nothing like one-on-one getting before people, actually meeting them and seeing them. So on that, you know, Zoom is, and those are a great device and a great technology. Again, a great conduit so people like you and I can meet, talk, and do these type of things. But you know, at the end of the day, like I know you said you play tennis or whatever it is, or basketball, whatever the sport is, it's more fun to get out there and play and do those things together as well.
Great, agreed. Brand or revenue first?
I would probably say revenue first, but you know, you've got to get your brand out there, ultimately, what you stand for. Because if you get your brand, what you stand for, and people realize that you can deliver, as I said before, not all wind up in no fastball, then your revenue should come. Because if you take care of your customer first, your revenue and profits will follow.
Yeah, love it. And now over to you. One question. Here's the mic.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's great. Thanks for asking. I have 2 thoughts that I want to put into one question for you. So I'll give you. Yeah. One is, you've lived around the world in different markets. And 2, now you've talked to a number of people around the world, different markets and thoughts. So taking those 2 concepts together, locale and experience in both places, what can you tell your audience? What have you learned? Are there certain philosophies or points of view you can tell that have helped you living around the world so you can bring to your clients and your audience? And same thing, what have you picked up from your audience through podcasts that may have influenced your book or how you move forward yourself?
The one thing that I've moved around a bit over the last few years, that's for certain. And obviously during my podcast, as well, I've spoken to everyone, most pockets of the world. And I think the one thing I've learned is very interesting. People actually like helping each other. It's simple, but it's so true. My podcast would have never got off the ground had it not been for guests like yourself, David, actually wanting to jump on, have a chat, and get knowledge out there that actually helps people, right? So if you take that as a thought for a second and you take it into your daily life or your business or anything like that, you see that actually life and business are pretty simple, because if we are able to get a product or service that actually helps someone, end of the day, that person is going to want to do something or do business with us, right? Because, you know, just like we're discussing football, tennis, basketball, et cetera, in sports, business is all about people, you know, and life is all about people. And if we go around and we are able to help one another on those separate journeys, then, you know, you're going to have a cool ride, and that ride's going to be wild, and you're also going to have a bit of fun along the way, right? So I think that's the biggest takeaway over the last, you know, there's been more over the last 22 years. You go out there, care, want to help people, and that will just come through in whatever you do. And, you know, the rest, as they say, will be written in history.
So empathy is a big one. But have you noticed that people in different countries approach problems or solutions in different ways? Or are you starting to see more symmetry? And secondly, have you seen any consistency with your interview, you know, people that you've interviewed, as far as bringing the type of information that you want to elicit to helping others?
So people in different, let me take the first question. Do they approach problems or business differently? Yeah, they do. They definitely approach, you know, these different ways, different cultures approach business differently. But I'm going to say the technical side of business, they approach differently. One thing, all the great people I've spoken to on my podcast and all the great business owners and founders and executives that I've worked throughout the years, you know, one thing that they had, again, comes back to being, you know, they're humble, but they were people, right? They could get along with people. Whether you're in the Netherlands, whether you're in Cape Town, whether you're in London, Chicago, you know, whether you're down in some parts of India, they could actually, you could hold up a conversation, you could create that relationship, and then you're off to the races. So I think there is some commonality in the way the great, you know, entrepreneurs that I've spoken to, there's definitely some commonality in it. But technical side of things, some things are slightly different, but not too much to write home about, if I'm honest with you. But if I would say this, the other thing is being direct and being honest and open. That's a classic, and I love it, because when people come onto my show or when I meet them, either in person or on Zoom nowadays, when they're open and honest and they give a shit, it comes through, right? And, you know, those are the folks that are great to chat to, they're great to engage with, and great to build sort of that next level of relationship.
So you're saying is that a smile or empathy is, you can, they used to say you could see it through the phone, but now you could see it through Zoom or potentially podcast as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I take, you know, we've chatted a few times before we've actually done the show today. So actually, I feel like in a way I'm getting to know you, right? And we got to know each other through the process. You mentioned tennis, I've mentioned Spain, I've mentioned, you know, so there's a bit of tune and throwing. So it's not just podcast, or it's not just a sales conversation. Yeah, get to know the person. You know,
so you're really saying, there's a certain universal curiosity, right? Aside from chemistry with people or however you want to phrase things, but you're saying that, you know, I'm interested in you, you're interested in me. That's really a pretty good way to start, right? And it's a great way to learn, is you have curiosity. And, you know, as long as you realize there's like a lot of opportunity, a lot of different ways you might approach things. But at the end of the day, you still got to get it through that same funnel and get it to their client or customer, however you see it, in a certain way, so they can take it from there. And that one of the things I always like about podcasts or reading articles, that you may just have that, it may not be like the most brilliant point ever made, but it's like all of a sudden it just like went off in your head. I don't know what it is or that. It's like, bam, I just unclogged that drain, that pipe that I've been thinking about, something I didn't realize was really bothering, but it's been gnawing at me. And now I know, you know, that's wow. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. And, you know, it's been an awesome show today. I've loved it. I've loved diving into some of the depths of remaining focused and how that has transpired in your business, and also diving into some other topics as well around expanding businesses and expanding yourself as you go on journey. So, you know, if folk out there wanted to get in touch with you guys, how can they do it? And what's the best way and means of doing that?
There's two ways. I mean, you can go to my email, which is david@dealrocket.com, DEALROCKIT.com. You can go on our site, we're Startup Rocket. You can go on our contact page and drop a note, and, you know, on LinkedIn or whatever. But I don't profess to have great expertise in certain of these other platforms, but I do know a lot about them. And however people, I have found, like I started with my kids, however they want to engage with me, I was happy to learn how to engage with them. And one of the things is, if these are prospective customers or people you want to get to know, you have to understand where they're going to be and how the best way to reach them. And so however you want to get a hold of me, just find me. I do answer phones and I do answer everything. And, you know, I'm happy to hop on a Zoom. Sorry, I had that in my brain. A Zoom or whatever it is. And, you know, if you ever want to see a demo of our platforms and things like that and really see a new way forward, and always looking for new ways of, you know, feedback. It's a great way to go and meet people. And I love learning about other people's businesses because it only helps mine. But just, you know, I look for all your audiences out there. I have an insatiable curiosity. Some people may find it annoying and different things, but I guess maybe I could become a good podcast host because I learned how to ask questions. But at the same time, I would say that, you know, we're all trying to learn how to dance differently. Before, it used to be in front of us. Some people are dancing better now because they may not worry about having that eye contact, you know, with that individual, or having to worry about what they wear all the time or whatever it is. And some people are like, I can't get used to this. But whatever it is, we have to learn how to adapt and learn how to exploit and empathize at the same time and realize that dogs do bark, children do come into calls, right? Phones do ring and different things. And, you know, it's a little different than at the office, so at the traditional office. And by the way, the water cooler or the locker room that athletes call, I think I mentioned before, there's probably a billion of us who used to go to the office every day that probably missed that locker room as well. So one of the things platforms can do, and you mentioned, we talked about before, can help recreate that locker room and give you a new locker room where you're trying to go and help you on your next actor transition. And this is one of the great things about the world. There's a lot of different ways to move across the playing field.
Awesome. And yeah, if you reach out to David, if you want to, obviously the details will also be in the show notes. And if you want to contact me for any information or connection, write to David, do that as well. And as we wrap up the show, I also remind everyone that I've got a book coming out in the next week or so. If you want to be on the distribution list, please drop me an email to richard@scaleupconsulting.co. The book is going into details of how you, as a founder, an executive, an evangelist, a business owner, can unlock your hidden profit zone. So looking forward to getting this out to you, and also looking forward to catching up with you guys next week. David, again, thanks for a brilliant show, and looking forward to your continued success.
Richard, thank you. Really, it was fun. I enjoyed it. Thought-provoking. And please make sure I get a copy of your book, okay?
Definitely.